You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
I would for sure want my female or male to go through skeletal maturity, which is for a large breed dog around 18 months of age. If you can push it out a little bit longer, 3 or 4, I think that's suitable. By that age, you've probably gotten the benefits from their ovaries or their testicles. And at that point, I think de-sexing them is not a terrible idea. But I think de-sexing puppies at 8 weeks is absolutely a dreadful thing to do to these puppies that are physiologically going to be changed by that.
Hey, Bird Dog Babes. My name is Courtney Bastian, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here with you to share the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world. I'm mom and 2 incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, breeding, and competing with my German wire hair pointers and Bronco Italianos. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. A big shout out to the people and partners that are helping me keep the MP3s rolling for this podcast. My Patreon patrons, the bread and butter, the peeps, the community of like-minded individuals that are eager to learn and offer to contribute. Join us for $5 per month on patreon.com/thebirddogbabe for exclusive discounts, content, and live Q&A sessions. 5% of your contribution goes to the AKC Canine Health Foundation, and 5% goes to conservation. Dakota 283 Unparalleled Protection Rotomold Kennels. My favorite is the G3. It has a molded-in, easy-to-grab handle on top that makes it easy for me to lift in and out of my truck. The keyed paddle latching door makes me feel at ease on trips when I run into the gas station or a restaurant for a bite to eat and I'm not able to bring the dogs in with me. Go to Dakota283.com and use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. And by Siren, shotguns for women. Siren carries the only full line of women's shotguns. They are dedicated to providing the equipment and knowledge that make shooting and hunting more enjoyable and less stressful. Newer season hunter, Siren offers multiple options that fit right out of the box. No more compromises. Go to SirenUSA.com and check out all the options available for upland, waterfowl, sporting, and trap shotguns. And while you're there, say hello to Julia, Siren's new 12-gauge sporting that is one of the most stunning shotguns I've laid my eyes on. Also by Big Frig, roto-molded coolers with heavy-duty latches, dual stainless steel lock plates that double as bottle openers. They also have dry boxes, tumblers, and growlers. And my favorite, the ability to customize the tumblers and coolers. Head to thebirddogbabe.com/Big Frig to view the wide array of sizes and colors available. There's a Badlands cooler perfect for your way of life. My guest today is Dr. Marty Greer of Veterinary Village in Lamira, Wisconsin. Dr. Greer is not only a well-known reproduction and neonatology veterinarian, she wears many hats such as a lawyer, an author, and she owns and operates 3 veterinary hospitals, and that's not even all of it. So I'm grateful she was able to join me for this conversation. I worked for Dr. Greer for 10 years, starting way back in 1998 through high school, college, and beyond. I was fortunate to start with a solid foundation in dogs and canine reproduction thanks to her. It's all too common when you go into a vet clinic with your puppy's first appointment that your vet is anxious to set up your puppy's spay or neuter. Or for some, it's us, the owner, that's anxious to have it done because we either don't want to deal with a female coming into season or a male that pees on everything. Dr. Greer takes the time to explain these myths and ideologies in this episode and what it's actually like to live with intact dogs and the risks and benefits to behavior, development, and overall health. All right, let's get after it. We're rolling. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Marta Greer. I appreciate having you on.
Oh, I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you, Courtney.
Yes. So we have a long history, and I feel like sometimes you're the one that I like to blame for this crazy world that I got into of of the dogs and the breeding and all the things that we do. You're a major influence on me, and boy, you sure helped form those early days in my life.
Well, I hope that's a good thing.
It is. It's a good thing. I'm very happy with where we are. And I think, my goodness, was it like my sophomore year in high school? I think I started working for you as the young vet assistant.
Very young fun. And enthusiastic and and a sponge ready to learn. It was great.
Yeah. And you have been keeping yourself incredibly busy since those days. You've added several new titles to the end of your name.
Yeah, it's been busy. Yeah. I went to law school in 2005 to 2010. And somewhere in there, I published my first book. And then a couple of weeks ago, we published the second book. So yeah, it's been good. Now I'm a grandmother as well. So awesome. It's good. It's busy. It's good. We have two practices. We're going to be opening a third in the next couple of weeks. So it's good.
Oh, neat. Where's the third practice going to be?
In Sun Prairie, which is part of the greater Madison community in Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's a completely novel concept. It's going to be a drive-through veterinary clinic for wellness only. And in case you want to know, which is the question everybody has asked, is this has been in the works for about 6 years. So it started before COVID was even a glimmer in anybody's radar. So we have had this in mind for convenience, for safety, for a lot of reasons. And it's finally coming to its own at a perfect time.
Are you going to have an associate over there? Or are you going to be working your way through that clinic as well?
Well, for now it's me, but we are in the process of hiring. So Okay. Yes, we will plan on having additional veterinarians. It's going to be a lot of evening and weekends because that's when the convenience happens for clients. And with the drive-through, it's going to allow people to stay in their vehicles with their children or their grandmother or whoever's with them, or they can come into the exam room and still keep an eye on their kids or grandma through the window in the exam room, because the exam rooms are adjacent to the garage bay. So the care can be provided in the vehicle, in the bay, or in the exam room, depending on what the pet does best with and what the client's needs are. So you don't have to go skating across a parking lot on an icy day behind your 90-pound dog and, you know, get at risk of falling down on the ice or losing track of what your kids are doing or, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was just going to say, like, what a great option that I wouldn't have to take both kids into a veterinary clinic where they like just get into trouble. And that's a fantastic idea. I love that. I wish there was more of that.
Yeah. Well, there will be, this is just the first.
Oh, very cool. Well, so I wanted to have you on today to talk about spay and neuter considerations and more specifically how that relates to our working dogs, our bird dogs, because the questions do come up a lot in this subject, because it does affect many things. And I feel like, you know, that very first veterinary appointment we take our new puppy to at 8 weeks old, we're hearing right away from a lot of veterinarians of, let's make that appointment to spay or neuter your dog. And unfortunately, I feel like that is just such a norm. But with all the research that has been happening and what we've learned with studies and going on in real life with our dogs, that's not the best recommendation.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. There have been a lot of changes in how we look at what spaying and neutering does to our pets and how we can improve on that by offering alternatives to our clients.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what are some like alternatives? So spay options, when or if are we do, if we have puppy owners or just our own, what are some of the different spay options available?
So as an alternative to spaying, we can do what's referred to as an ovary sparing spay. meaning that we leave one or both ovaries and remove the uterus all the way down to the cervix. So by doing that, we've left her hormonally intact. She'll still have heat cycles, but no vaginal discharge and no real attraction to most male dogs because there's not going to be as much discharge. But by doing so, we eliminate the possibility of a pregnancy, of a pyometra, which is a big concern for a lot of people. But we have protected her against a lot of the things that spaying is felt to be a contributing factor to, which are going to include things like obesity. We know any dog that's spayed or neutered needs to have their caloric intake reduced by 25% right at the time of spaying and neutering so that we don't end up with them developing obesity. We see up to 20% is in the literature, but I suspect it's higher, of spayed females developing urinary incontinence, dribbling urine in their sleep or dribbling urine at other places. It's more of a problem in females than males. So at least 20% of our dog population and probably more end up on long-term medications to manage that. And I think there's more than people are willing to tell us. I think people are embarrassed to tell us that their dog has to wear panties in the bed or that they have to put a special towel underneath the dog or that they have to keep the dog from sleeping in bed with them because of the urinary incontinence. So I think that's under-addressed. We also see an increased risk of thyroid disease, hypothyroidism. An increased risk of three kinds of cancer have been identified so far in the large breed dogs primarily, and that's going to be hemangiosarcoma, which is splenic cancer, cancer of the spleen, really common in golden retrievers, Labradors, German shepherds. We see less osteosarcoma if the dogs are not spayed or neutered, that's bone cancer. And we see less lymphoma, again, a really common disease, that's cancer of the lymph nodes. So we see less of those three forms of cancer in dogs that are spayed, not spayed or neutered. So leaving them intact protects them against osteosarcoma, hemangiosarcoma, and lymphosarcoma. We see less cruciate ruptures. There's a study that Benjamin Hart did that shows we see four times the incidence of ruptured cruciates in golden retrievers if they're spayed or neutered. It's 1.2 times for Labradors, but it's four times for golden retrievers. Really significant. Less hip dysplasia, just a whole array, less allergies, less anxiety. And a lot of people think that there's going to be less aggression if they're neutered or spayed, but in reality, we're finding that that's not true either. So it's a big deal. We have really physiologically, permanently changed the whole endocrine system of our dogs and the feedback between the pituitary gland and all the other endocrine organs in their body by removing the ovaries. And if we do it when they're especially young, which has been the big trend, is especially in rescue organizations, they want to spay them or neuter them when they're 8 weeks old. We have forever altered that dog's life expectancy, their longevity, their health, and all kinds of other pieces that end up being difficult for clients to manage by not leaving them hormonally intact until they're mature or older.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we can see physical differences in appearance when when you look at a dog that was spay or neutered earlier, because they just look like they're lacking muscle mass. They have a chest that is more shallow, almost more of a roachy conformation, it seems. Mm-hmm. And is that all to do with like the hormones?
Yes.
Not okay. And so that's all intermediately related to the formation of the hips then and the ACL?
Right. And once you've been around dogs for a while and started to see the subtle differences in how they look. I mean, you know, we all know what a Labrador looks like, but if you start really looking hard at the dogs that come through a lot of the rescue organizations where they're spayed or neutered young, it's really common to see that those dogs, when you walk down the aisles of the Humane Society, are tall, lanky, straight-legged, like you said, not a deep chest, not a wide head, not a you know, bulkier looking dog. So they're taller, skinnier, lankier, and that changes the angulation at their hip and their knee. So that's why we think we're seeing an increased risk of hip dysplasia and ruptured cruciates, is because we've altered their growth. We changed the time at which their growth plates close. So they close later, not earlier. They close later. So those dogs end up taller and skinnier. Historically, back in the 1600s is when they used to neuter young male boys to make them eunuchs to sing in the choir. Mm-hmm. And those boys were always tall and slender and kept high voices. So we're doing something similar to that with our dogs, is we're changing them hormonally by removing their testicles or their ovaries at a young age. And it's really detrimental to their overall health. And it's astounding to me the number of veterinarians that are not interested in looking at the newer literature and that are not really buying into some of the things. Now, I've been in practice close to 40 years. And in that amount of time, I've spent most of it working with clients that are breeders. So I have had the blessing of seeing dogs be born, mature, grow up, and develop into what they should be by not being spayed or neutered versus what they do become if they're spayed or neutered young, because I've seen this. So I believe this literature in a way that other veterinarians are having a harder time. They're kind of grappling to wrap their arms around it. But it's very clear to me that that's exactly what's been happening. Courtney, you and I could walk down the aisle of a Humane Society today and pick up the dogs that were neutered when they were 8 or 10 or 12 weeks old versus the dogs that were left hormonally intact. It's that obvious to an educated eye what the differences are.
You know, and I think of the reasons why people would want to spay or neuter early, not just from a veterinarian's recommendation per se. A lot of people with males worry about them marking in the house or having aggression. And I actually hear often that if there's an aggression issue, if they neuter it, it's going to be fine and it's not going to have those issues. Mm-hmm. And can you touch on that, on some of those male behaviors that people are worried about, and if that is directly related to the hormones that they have by being intact?
Sure. And so, yes, marking territory is a concern, but it's just part of housebreaking. So you need to housebreak that puppy and teach him that lifting his leg in the house is unacceptable. It doesn't differ that much from a housebroken puppy. So it's no different than teaching your puppy that standing in the middle of the kitchen table when they crawled up on the kitchen chair and started eating the leftovers off the table when you ran to the bathroom, that's unacceptable too. So it's a lot of it is a training issue. And because in the United States, since the 1970s, it's been the norm to spay or neuter our dogs, we have generations of pet owners that have lost the ability to understand dogs' normal sexual behavior and to correct it when they see it happen. But like I said, it's no different than training them that standing in the middle of the kitchen table is unacceptable. So you need to train it. The other thing that people don't understand about the aggression is if you have a neuter dog and an intact dog in the same room, the intact dog is not going to be the one that starts an altercation if one starts. It's going to be started by the neutered dog. And that's a little hard, again, for people to wrap their head around because they always thought the aggressive dog was the one with testosterone. And in reality, it's the one without testosterone that's like, whoa, I need to get the upper hand here before somebody else beats me to it. So it tends to be the altered dog, the neutered dog, that initiates those altercations. And I think that's really important for people to understand, so that if they do have a situation where they have a dog that's intact and a dog that's neutered, that they know how to interact with those dogs and limit the possibility of having that type of unfortunate interaction start. It's that way at the dog park. It's that way if you go to your neighbor's house or you have family over. So just be aware that the one that makes the first move is usually going to be the one that feels like they're the underdog because they're neutered. And so they're going to be the one that initiates that interaction that may be unfortunate. So keep that in mind. A dog can tell an intact dog from a neutered dog about 200 yards away. They already know. And it's really fascinating to me that dogs are able to pick up on whatever, if it's odor or if it's body type or if it's body language, we're not quite sure what it is that allows the dog to recognize the dog that is coming toward them as male or female, neutered or intact, very, very quickly when they're at a distance away. I think it's a fascinating study in human behavior or dog behavior that I'd love to know more about. So if anybody wants to look into that, let me know.
And report back. Yeah. and in females, we get several inquiries from people that just want a male because they don't want to worry about a female coming in season. A lot of people are spaying before they come into that first season. But to be honest, I feel it's more that they just don't understand how a heat cycle actually works. They think when a bitch comes in a season, there's just going to be blood everywhere for a month. And it's not really like that. And it is easy to manage. Can you kind of walk through that process of what a heat cycle looks like, how often a female comes in, and how easy or how people can manage that?
Sure. So the typical female dog will cycle every 6 to 9 months once she reaches puberty. Puberty can happen anywhere between 8 months and 2 years of age, and that's all completely normal. She'll typically cycle twice a year, but it can be a little bit less frequent than that. Sometimes it's every 5 months, but it's typically 6 to 9 month intervals. During the first 10 to 14 days of her heat cycle, she will have a bloody vaginal discharge. Some dogs keep themselves unbelievably clean to the point that clients don't even have an easy time determining if the dog is in heat or not. Sometimes they're a little bit messier. And I try to avoid putting panties on dogs, especially 24 hours a day when they're in heat, because I'm concerned about trapping bacteria and moisture and things. Dogs weren't really meant to wear clothes. So I try to avoid the use of those, but it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes we have to do that. You can keep her crated. Sometimes people will take the female somewhere else, or they'll take, if they have a male and a female that are intact, they may take the male to a boarding kennel for that time period. So typically the first 10 to 14 days she's in heat, she is not receptive to the male. She has a bloody vaginal discharge. She has a swollen vulva. Over the next few days, then the discharge will change to a clear or a straw color, just kind of a light yellow color, and the vulva will become softer. That is when she is receptive to the male. And most males are pretty smart. They know when it's too early to try to make advances toward the female. And usually you have a little bit of time to assess that she's in heat, even if she does keep herself pretty clean. The males, if you've got an intact male in the house, may stop eating. He may start to howl at night. He may give you some kind of indication that there's something going on. And of course, letting males and females out into the exercise yard unattended, if you're not sure of where she's at in her heat cycle, is not a very good idea. So you want to really be vigilant if you're monitoring those situations. I've had clients get knocked down at the top of a flight of stairs by a male dog that's like, okay, today is the day.
Right.
Holding up the stairs, knocks this little 102-pound owner over and has his way with the female pretty promptly. So you do want to be pretty attentive to those things so that you don't get caught off guard and don't accidentally have a breeding if you don't plan on it.
Watch her when she's outside too, because, you know, the girls, their milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. So we found that pretty, we found that out pretty quickly here when we moved to Montana and didn't have a fenced in yard. And I looked over to the left and the, you know, a stray dog was on top of my Bronco female. I'm like, oh no. It happens very quickly, but thankfully,
If you tie her up in the yard and just leave her there, man, that's just an invitation.
Oh my gosh.
So you want to be attentive to that. So yes, you've got to watch every move that you make when you've got a female in heat, because it only takes 1 second of a slip up to have an unplanned breeding, unplanned by you, planned by them. Mm-hmm. So you gotta be really attentive. So yes, so for about four or five days, she'll be receptive to the male, and he will know she's receptive because he will be waiting his turn. And then after that, she'll go into metestrus and then diestrus, during which time, again, she won't be receptive. And then around 60 days later, every female that goes through a heat cycle goes through a false pregnancy. Some are more pronounced with symptoms than others. Some are very mild. You don't even notice anything. Some will lactate and some will carry on, and they'll cry, or they'll carry little toys around. They may do a lot of different behaviors that are kind of interesting. So you do want to keep an eye on that and be aware of it. I've had clients not understand what that looks like. And so they'll call and say, I think there's something wrong with her. She's crying. I think her back hurts. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think she thinks she's got puppies somewhere and you just have hidden them from her. So they'll carry around stuffed animals and act really fun and funny. And then eventually that will then dissipate as well. And typically, again, like I said, every 6 to 9 months, you'll see that. So you just want to be really careful and really attentive, because some of them are really, really sneaky about their heat cycles.
And I found, you know, when you're talking about keeping the male and female maybe at different locations, but if you don't have that option, I found that the males actually do better when they're kenneled right next to the female that's in season, where he doesn't have access to her, but he's not across a room or in a different side of the house, that he's going to be howling or crying, that he's more content when he's actually right next to her, even though it's probably difficult for him. But I don't know. Have you noticed that at all?
Yeah, I think that's true. But you have to be aware, I have been to one lecture, and I didn't think this was possible, but it was witnessed by someone that really knew what he was talking about. Is he came into his kennel one day, he was running a research lab, and found his male and female were tied through a chain link fence.
Oh.
So where there's a will, there's a way.
Oh my gosh.
And somehow that's exactly what happened. I'm not really sure how they all lined up that way, but I think it's important to know that that happens. We've also had clients that have had dogs that are very, very clever. I had one that had a beagle, and he would crawl out of his kennel across the top of the enclosures and then drop down into the run where the female was, breed her. And then when he was done breeding her, he would crawl back up and back into his kennel. So the owner was never aware that breedings had taken place until she caught him on video camera. So yeah, you'd be
so naughty.
Our dogs can come up with when they're left to their own devices, shall we say.
Oh my gosh. Incredibly clever. So. Super naughty. Oh my gosh. And the girls in the panties thing, is something from personal experience. When they're wearing panties in the house, I can't tell you how many times I've forgotten when I've let them outside that they were wearing, those. And it's like, yeah. Oh, she just pooped her diaper.
Yeah. Can't blame the dog for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's easier just to, keep them in their kennel and let them clean themselves, tend to themselves. And like you said, not worry about having that bacterial introduction, because keeping pads in and out of there, or they chew up a pad, that's not good.
Yep. That's a foreign body waiting to happen.
Right. Right.
You want to be really cautious. Yes, you're absolutely right. And I absolutely don't put panties on dogs immediately after the breeding. A lot of people want to whip those panties right back onto them as soon as you've done the transcervical insemination or the AI. My concerns are twofold. One is putting any kind of pressure on the abdomen after a breeding and then expelling the semen that you've just spent a lot of money putting inside. And number two, that bacterial component being trapped up in the panty, being moist and yucky. So I'm pretty limited on putting panties on dogs. So it's probably best just to crate the female and keep her from soiling your brand new white couch or brand new white carpet. Although I can't really understand people that get white carpet or white couches
if they have dogs.
Dogs in their lifestyle. So
right. Have you found with the false pregnancies that bitches are more apt to for that to lead to a pyometra?
No, but that's about the same timing. And certainly if you have a bitch that has significant false pregnancies and you're struggling with it, there are medications that we can put dogs on to eliminate that. It's especially like if you've got a short-coated dog, like a Shar-Pei or a short hair, and you're trying to show her and she has significant mammary development, that can be distracting to the judge. So many times we will put them on medication if it becomes problematic. And if someone has questions about that, we could be more specific about the drug that I would use for that.
Is there any damage actually happening to them when they are in a false pregnancy? Because I just think like Broncos get them almost every single time they come into season, they have a false pregnancy. And is there anything that's going on there that we should be putting them on meds to prevent that from happening?
No. Every bitch has that. It's a normal physiological change that we see. It's just, like I said, some have symptoms and some don't. But I wouldn't be really concerned about it unless she's lactating heavily enough that it becomes an issue. However, this kind of leads to a question that I don't think we've got on our list of things to discuss, and that's whether you should breed your dogs back to back when you are having dogs in a breeding program. And the answer to that used to be we would breed once, skip a cycle, breed once, skip a cycle. And now the current thinking is to breed back to back. Now, my preference is to breed two litters back to back, then skip a cycle, and then breed two more. And again, I said this is a little off track from what our original plans
were. No, it's good.
But it's, I think, a really important thing to discuss with people that are keeping dogs in breeding programs is a pregnant uterus is a healthy, happy uterus. So we want to keep them from developing pyometras and other issues. And they typically don't get a pyometra if they are pregnant. I have seen two cases where they had a simultaneous, but that would be pretty rare. So breeding back to back is useful. I tend to skip one cycle in between two. So I breed two back to back, then skip one, and then breed two back to back, because nutritionally we know bitches need about 8 months to get nutritionally back to where they were prior to the breeding. So knowing that information, we can then supplement with DHA and some other appropriate all stage or puppy diets to keep her nutritionally where she should be, so that when you are ready to breed the next time, she's ready to go and she's able to successfully raise a litter of puppies. Canine Companions for Independence did a study on almost 5,800 puppies that showed that their service dogs that were dams for the litters, that their first litters, they had a 50% graduation rate, but by their fifth litter, they were down to a 25% graduation rate. And they determined that that was due to a DHA depletion. DHA is a fatty acid that's found in fish oil. So by supplementing that, and we certainly now see it added to a lot of dog foods, that DHA component makes for smarter puppies. So you can buy DHA in salmon oil or in a number of other forms and supplement your females that are in your breeding program with DHA. And we've started doing that and have had really nice success with vigorous puppies. One of my technicians really feels that her puppies are stronger, more vigorous when they're born. And I've had also clients comment that they do believe that their puppies are smarter. So simple to do. It also has been shown in people to reduce dementia. So if you can remember this long enough to write it down, write down DHA and go to the store or go online and buy yourself a bottle of DHA and continually use it so that your brain continues to function as well as it can for as long as it can. Prevent your dementia. Way off track. Sorry. This is not a spay neuter question.
No, no, that's good. But now you have me rolling down this rabbit hole a little bit further because it got me thinking. So when are you starting DHA with your brood bitches? Before you're planning to breed, are you starting them on it at 2 years old right away as a puppy? What are you doing?
Yeah. If they've been on a puppy diet that says smart puppy, and some of the bags actually say that, some of the brands of food carry that information, then you probably don't need to start supplementing it until she's in a breeding program. If you're getting a new puppy and you are starting off with him or her right now, you can start adding DHA to their diet the minute that they walk in your door. So we know that it's added to human baby formula now because, again, it creates smarter babies. So DHA should be a component that we're all including in our nutritional profiles. If it's not at a high enough level in your dog food, or if you're not sure, then purchase DHA, start popping it down the dogs. It comes in a dog form. It comes in a human form. There's some pretty strong merit. When they start putting it in human baby formula, I think we need to sit up and pay attention to that.
Right. Is there a certain milligram, a dosage that they should have?
No, I usually just do one capsule a day. It is a fatty acid, so it's going to hang around for a while. It's not you have to give several times a day. Just a regular human dose, or maybe half of a human dose, depending on the size dog you have. If you have a 20-pound dog, you don't need to give them a dose that a 200-pound person would take. So kind of scale it according to that.
Okay. Wow, super interesting. Thank you for sharing that. And we all want smarter puppies. And I just think, well, what would that do, field ability wise? Is that, I don't know. I don't really want my wire hair smarter, but I mean, the Broncos could definitely benefit from some DHA.
Well, and that's the problem. How smart a dog do you want? I've got farm dog puppies right now that are getting out of their X-Pen already. They're climbing out of the X-Pen and they're not 4 months old yet. They are following in their mother's footsteps. I don't really need that. So be careful what you wish for.
Right. Well, it reminds me because, you know, Purina Pro Plan has that Bright Mind formula. And a lot of times when people switch their senior dogs to that food, they start seeing those habits they had when they were younger of chewing on the, you know, the bottom of their pants again and doing all these naughty things. And they're like, I'm taking my dog off the food because it's annoying me.
Well, that Bright Mind formula and then the prescription equivalent to it, NeuroCare, are fabulous diets, absolutely fabulous diets. We see less dementia. We see fewer seizures. We just, I like to put a lot of my senior dogs on those diets, and they've really proven to be very beneficial food. So if you've got a senior dog or a dog that may be starting to show some signs of neurologic dysfunction, you can buy it at almost any location. It is not a difficult food to buy. It comes in a couple flavors and it is really, really good food.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So speaking of senior dogs, is there going to be a moment when we want to spay or neuter at all in a dog's life? If the brood bitch is done with her breeding duties, 7, 8 years old, or if the male no longer has viable semen, is it recommended that we have them altered at that time?
Sure. And I think for the females, it's a different answer than the males. The females, okay. I would say once she's done with being bred, I would spay her. I'm hoping that she's at least 4 by the time you do that. But that's going to reduce her risk of pyometra, which is going to occur in up to 25% of all intact female dogs after the age of 9. Now, there are some breeds that are at higher incidence than others. Bernese Mountain Dogs are at about 48% pyometras. And there are other breeds who are at a much lower percentage. And there is a paper that we can post up on this link that can allow people to go take a look at their individual breed, because I'm not going to go through 120 breeds and explain them all. But the top 5 are giant breed European dogs. So Bernese Mountain Dogs are heading the list hand over fist on that. So yes, I would spay her when she's done with her breeding career. On the males, you know, that's up to you. The 2 reasons that I push to neuter a male dog are going to be if he develops a testicular tumor, which are nearly always benign in dogs, and it's simple enough to remove that testicle. And sometimes we just remove one testicle. So if we have a dog with a testicular tumor and we want to continue him in a breeding program, you don't have to take both testicles. You can just take the affected one. The other time that I would neuter a dog at an older age is if you are experiencing problems with benign prostatic hypertrophy. We do have a drug, finasteride, that we frequently put our male dogs on for that. But some dogs are surgical candidates, some are not. If he's still valuable in your breeding program and you don't want to neuter him, you can put him on finasteride, keep him as an active breeding male if he still has quality semen. But if you've got a 14-year-old dog and no particular reason to neuter him, I wouldn't put him under anesthesia and do a procedure on him unless you had prostate issues or a testicular tumor. And the other thing that we need to mention here is that we see an increased number of dogs with prostate cancer that are neutered, not intact, which again is counterintuitive. So a lot of people think that neutering the dog will protect them from prostate cancer, and in reality, it puts them at increased risk. The other thing we didn't mention, and we need to kind of circle back here, is mammary tumors. And that's the only time, breast cancer or mammary tumors, that's the only real benefit that we see in spaying a young dog before she's 2 years of age, is we see a decreased risk of breast cancer or mammary tumors. In my 40 years in practice, I can count on one hand the number of dogs I've seen die as a result of breast cancer. I can tell you, I've seen a lot of dogs. We'll see a dog come in with spleen cancer, hemangiosarcoma, or lymphosarcoma. I don't see that nearly that incidence with breast cancer, but once she is spayed, you will have some protective effect by taking out her ovaries. So I want to make sure we don't overlook that as a really important piece. And again, I've got a document that I can send you to put up that will have a chart on it showing the advantages and disadvantages, because I've presented both sides in this chart of spaying and neutering versus a vasectomy, which we can still talk about for the males, or an ovary sparing spay for the females versus a traditional spay or a traditional neuter. So it's a nice concise document that you can look at and go through and look at the disadvantages and the advantages. And it may vary for you by breed. The same paper that has the pyometra incidence in it has an incidence of mammary tumor, So you may want to look at that for your females. We know Bernese Mountain Dogs and Greater Swiss Mountain Dogs, by the time they're 3 and a half, have benign prosthetic hypertrophy. Almost all of them do if they're not neutered. We don't see nearly that incidence in older dogs in other breeds. So there are absolutely breed variations. If you have a dog that's from a line of dogs that's high risk for lymphoma or hemangiosarcoma, because you know that their heritage will reflect that, you may want to look at that dog differently. If you've got a golden retriever whose father and grandfather died of hemangiosarcoma or osteosarcoma, you may not want to neuter that dog as young as you would if he's a Shih Tzu that has no family history of cancer. So very important that we look at breed as well as sex and age when we're making these decisions for our dog's health.
Okay. So what is going to be a recommended age for spay neuter? So if the dog isn't going to be a breeding animal, is it ever recommended to spay or neuter them if the people just don't want to deal with the heat cycle, or they don't want the male more apt to run away looking for a girl in season? Is there a recommended age for that?
Yeah, and right now we don't have a real hard number on this. It would be really nice to be able to tell you that by age 4 that magic happened and that it was safe to take her ovaries or safe to neuter him. We're going to think it's probably somewhere in that mid age group, mid to young age group around 4, but nobody can tell you that. There's been a lot of really great studies done. Benjamin Hart has put together a lot of data that's available through AKC. David Waters has a lot of information about the Rottweiler breed and females. So we know that the dogs that are spayed and neutered younger from these studies have greater longevity. And you'll hear people talk about, well, you know, the Rottweilers all get breast cancer. And I'm like, well, you know, we're seeing Rottweilers live to be 15 years old when they're not spayed or neutered when they're young. They're dying at 15 of frailty, and they may die with cancer, but they aren't dying of cancer. It's sort of like COVID right now. It's, you know, are they dying from COVID, or do they also have COVID at the same time? So those are bits of data that are a little bit difficult to tease apart. And right now we don't have a hard number to say, but I would for sure want my female or male to go through skeletal maturity, which is for a large breed dog around 18 months of age. If you can push it out a little bit longer, 3 or 4, I think that's suitable. By that age, you've probably gotten the benefits from their ovaries or their testicles. And at that point, I think desexing them is not a terrible idea. But I think desexing puppies at 8 weeks is absolutely a dreadful thing to do to these puppies that are physiologically going to be changed by that.
What about different neutering options? And I know it's a common thing for you to hear at the clinic, because I remember when I was working there with you, I heard it often. Then men in general have this issue with having their male dogs neutered. It's a real thing.
Right. It's a real thing. They're kind of connected. Yeah. There's a little cord between their testicles and their dog's testicles. They relate.
Right. They totally do relate.
Yeah. And they get pretty worried about this whole idea of neutering. Understand that there is a psychological as well as physiological thing that goes on with it. Their other alternatives are either a vasectomy, which is where you would leave the testicles but remove the vas deferens, so that if the dog did have a mating, they would not have a fertile mating because the semen would not be delivered from the testicles into the bitch. The alternative is there is an injectable product. It used to be called Neutrosol. It is also called Zuterin. It's an injection that's caustic, irritating to the testicles. It's done with sedation or anesthesia, and it's a chemical injected directly into the testicle to eliminate or diminish semen production. The problem with that is, number one, I think it's got to be painful. And so if you're going to use an anesthetic procedure to do a procedure, you might as well do something that's not going to hurt the dog. And number two, it only reduces their testosterone by about 40%. So they're still going to have more testosterone than a neutered dog would have. So I'm kind of the opinion that that's not a great alternative. It's either a vasectomy or a neuter or nothing at all, just depending on your lifestyle, the dog's lifestyle. I've talked to a lot of people where doggy daycare is not an option If they have their dog with an ovary sparing spay or a vasectomy, sometimes even boarding kennels are reluctant to take a dog that's intact. So before you make those kinds of decisions, you should contact the places that you would normally use for doggy daycare or boarding or grooming or whatever, and just make sure that they are comfortable with a dog that is sexually intact as far as hormones go, but not capable of reproduction. So those are the nuances to those things that you need to check out before you make that decision.
Yeah. And there's also, if people are going to do a full neuter on the males and want to see something still there, there's an option of neuticles, right?
Yeah. Yes, there are neuticles. There is the old style, which are pretty rigid. They're not very realistic. There is the newer style, which are made out of a, more of a softer silicone, some of which even have the epididymis and a cord attached to it. And those can be put in at the time that a neuter is performed to replace the physical appearance of an intact dog. So if you have a Great Dane, it's short-coated, it's tall, you can see that he has testicles from, you know, half a block away. For some people, that's really important. For other people, the appearance is not important, or sometimes they don't even like the appearance of testicles, so they like to get rid of them. But if you have a coated dog, like a golden retriever, you're not going to notice if they have neuticles or not unless the dog rolls over. They will image differently on an x-ray, so you can tell that they are not the real thing. If you do imaging with ultrasound or x-ray, but it is appealing to a certain subset of clients that they want to have the dog look like they're still intact. Bulldogs, pit bull terriers, the short-coated dogs that have, you know, beagles, things that you can see from the rear still have testicles.
Do you find that it's the same clientele that pull into your parking lot with a big truck that have fake testicles hanging from the back of their truck?
No.
Do you find a correlation there with that?
No, sometimes it's, you know, it's just a personal preference, and I'm supportive of whatever their decision is. The neuticles are they're pretty simple to use. We've put them into a number of dogs, and they are really low complication rate. So if it's important to you that you have an appearance of an intact dog, go for it.
What about dogs with hip dysplasia? So if they've been diagnosed with that at a young age, a working dog, you know, year and a half, 2 years old, obviously they're not going to be a breeding animal. Do you think that they should wait for a certain age to have that done? Is there any advantage or disadvantage to having a spay neuter if they have that going on?
Yeah, especially if they're under two, I would definitely push it off as late as I could so that they have the skeletal maturity and don't develop any more severe hip dysplasia than they would ordinarily by leaving them intact. The other piece is, as soon as you do a neuter, and I have a lot of people that do agility and other performance work, dock diving and all those other high power activities with their dogs that want their dogs to have a vasectomy and be left intact, or an ovary sparing spay if it's a female, because they retain better muscle tone, better angulation. They're just better physically able to do those kinds of events. So yes, there's definitely a difference in how those dogs when they are left intact. So yes, I do not like to neuter them if I can avoid it.
Thanks, Dr. Greer. I appreciate your insight on this. If people haven't already heard of or purchased, you have a couple books out. One of them I call Canine Reproduction Bible. But do you want to talk about what the real name is?
Sure. It's really called Canine Reproduction and Neonatology. It was published in 2015, and that year it won the Dog Writers Association Book of the Year. I was really proud of that because it was the first book I'd ever written and probably was going to be the only one. It's very comprehensive. It goes through everything from pre-breeding screening through heat cycle, through selecting different types of semen and different styles of breeding, through the pregnancy, through the C-section and or delivery, the whelping, neonatal care, and then information about the male and female. So it's very comprehensive. It's about 450 pages long, and it's dense. Has lots of pictures. If you don't like icky stuff, don't look at the pictures, because they're real life. Everything in there is a photograph or something that we saw at our practice. Mm-hmm. The second book was kind of a surprise. I wasn't really planning on it, but I wrote a book called Your Pandemic Puppy, and both of them are available on Amazon. Amazon is the publisher of Your Pandemic Puppy. And I wrote it because this spring, when COVID started to become a thing, I had a lot of people talking in my ear about how many new puppies there were and how many breeders were breeding and a lot of wild things going on that we were concerned would lead to dogs ending up in rescue or shelters or, you know, different places that when people started going back to work or school, that they wouldn't be prepared for separation anxiety, crating, the kinds of things that we ordinarily would teach our puppies for life skills and survival skills. So I realized I had all these people in my ear talking about that. My exam room materials were out of date. They didn't include the new spader neuter recommendations. They didn't include the new heartworm and flea and tick meds, the titer information, the new vaccine info. I went online and I took a look around at the books that were currently available for client education, and they were pretty out of date and pretty sad. So I sat down with the intention of writing just a handout, and very quickly it turned into a 178-page book, courtesy of my fabulous publisher, Denise Flame, who did just a tremendous job of laying out a book and beautiful cover and just really a great handbook. It goes through behavior, it goes through health, it goes through a lot of different things. Again, very comprehensive and very up-to-date and perhaps a little edgy for what some veterinarians would be comfortable with. So I want people to know that it is not just your ordinary run-of-the-mill, blah, 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 heartworm, flea, and tick stuff. It goes through a lot of detail that simply isn't out there in any other printed format.
Fantastic. I will put links to both of those books into the show notes then for this episode so people have easy access to that. But thank you so much for joining me today and all your information that you shared with listeners. And I know you got a lot going on there, so I won't take up any more of your time. But it was so nice to catch up with you, Dr. Greer.
I'm so happy to have a chance to do this with you, Courtney. It's been great. Yeah. So we'll get some links up for you. And please let me know if there's anything I can do.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it and tag me and someone that would benefit from listening. Please help me out by giving the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from, and hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Be sure to join me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're interested in some Bird Dog Babe swag or gear that I rely on, be sure to check out the store on my website, thebirddogbabe.com.
Until next time, Bird Dog Babes, keep them versatile.